When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast at Sly'sOffice.com, brought to you by the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, and our friends at the Operating Engineers, Local 139. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation joins us. John, I want you to hear something that's very troubling, and I think you, as a man of peace, will be very concerned about this. Are you ready?
Okay.
This is the woman that represents Northwest Georgia, Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Oh.
Okay, here we go. All right, hang on. That always takes one thing here. Okay.
Speaker can do anything he wants to do if he's willing to do it, but we have a speaker that's so weak that an 80-year-old man with dementia is able to fool him. This is where we are. And Fox News wants to make sure that you guys don't have your own opinion, that you only have the opinion that Fox News tells you to have. And that's why Fox News attacks Steve Bannon. That's why Fox News attacks Charlie Kirk. And that's why Fox News would love to murder Tucker Carlson. And that's the reality. And that's why Fox News is losing viewers, because I think you guys are smart. The American people are too smart. And you're tired of being fed outrage TV and watching and voting and donating to Republicans that don't do a damn thing about it.
That was on the Steve Bannon show. By the way, he's going to jail. Finally.
Well, he's having a little bad week.
Yeah.
Maybe they should spend more time focusing on his legal troubles and less on trying to remove the Speaker of the House.
Well, but aren't you concerned about Tucker Carlson? I've been praying all day.
Well, I do want Tucker to be safe. My suspicion is that probably Rupert Murdoch has other things on his mind than, you know, taking out Tucker Carlson. But, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene may have gotten some sort of message via the Jewish space lasers that informed her of things that we earthlings can't quite understand.
Huh. Well, she's had a bad week. This is when she tried to topple Speaker Mike Johnson.
Listen.
Devs to be vacant. Uniparty for the American people watching.
Gentlelady will suspend.
Is this any sign that the fever in the fever swamp are beginning to recede?
No.
Okay. Oh, come on.
You're
supposed to be the optimist on this podcast, not me.
I am an optimist, but I'm not, you know, completely unrealistic. I mean, the fact of the matter is, Marjorie Taylor Greene was objecting to the most extreme right-wing Speaker of the House in the history of the country, right? A guy who literally has gotten the way of, really, he's blocking every significant piece of legislation outside of a couple of foreign policy initiatives. And you know, he's...
Well, I will give him credit for doing that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, I'm not, but that's why she's trying to get rid of it. You understand that she's got 98% of what she wants, and that's not enough, right? And I hate to tell you that if Marjorie Taylor Greene wasn't there, and a couple of the other folks, then you were just looking at Johnson, you would say, look, Johnson's by and large a very bad player. And to give you an example, or just give you a read on this, okay? You know who voted to keep Johnson as Speaker of the House? Lauren Boebert and Matt Gaetz.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So with all due respect.
Well, Boebert's in a tight race.
Yeah,
she needs to raise money.
Let me translate that a little bit for the listeners. She's doomed. She cannot win. And she's finished political.
Should I pray for her too? I'm praying for Tucker, and I'll pray for her as well.
I would expand the list, yes. And Matt Gaetz, I mean, Matt Gaetz, as always, is just having a mean, he took down the speaker already this year, chooses not to take down another. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that when you look at what happened this week with the speakership, it was such a mess, right? Such a disaster all over the place, not because Green was going to get any place, but because of just the absurdity of it. And it is true that this vote did tell you precisely how many Republicans are really with Marjorie Taylor Greene, right? And it turns out that there were 11 or 10, her and 10 other members, right? And so she's very isolated within her caucus. But if you move beyond that isolated fringe, then you get into the next, you know, the next closest fringe, if you will. But we really can't, as a society, you know, say to ourselves, well, you know, now, you know, sanity and you know, kind of mainstream values have prevailed because Mike Johnson remains as Speaker of the House.
All right. As long as we're talking about the whole kind of crazy outrage machine that's going on right now, let's talk about Kristi Noem.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, so here is Kristi Noem on that very liberal network. It's kind of similar to the one Bernie used to have for radio. A very, very, very liberal network, Newsmax. Here we go.
Going back to what you said a moment ago, maybe not lying to the American people. And I think this is important to talk about because the book's called No Going Back, The Truth on What's Wrong with Politics. And I think part of the problem with politics today is that politicians aren't honest with the American people.
I agree.
If Governor, if you asked me a month ago, who's at the top of the list to run with Donald Trump, I would have said your name. If you asked me that same question this morning, I don't even think you're on the list.
Really?
So my question
and
for you, yes, really, and it's because of things that have come out in this book, like your claims that you met Kim Jong-un. And then over the last week,
I've been to the DMZ. I've been to Iowa. What I've said is that
did you stare down Kim Jong-un? Here's, let me, Governor, one second. I will give you an opportunity to respond. I just want to get this out there. So here's the quote from the book. You say that I remember when I met North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. I'm sure he underestimated me, having no clue about my experience staring down little tyrants. Governor, that never happened.
What I have said in the book is that when I became aware of the content that we had, it changed. And that's the way that it is. So I should not have put that anecdote in the book. I'm not going to talk about my meetings.
But an anecdote indicates that it happened,
I'm
right?
I'm not going to talk about my conversations with world leaders. I've been involved in policy for 30 years. For 30 years, I've been traveling the world, talking to world leaders. And that is a conversation that I'm not going to have in this book. So I've answered that in interviews already. I've been very forthright, and I think that a typical politician wouldn't be that honest. As soon as it became to my attention, I asked for the content to be changed, and it has been.
Governor, I'm not asking you about the details of this alleged meeting. I'm asking if the meeting actually happened. I don't think it did. If it did, you'd be able to confirm for me that, yes, it did, and here's when it happened. It happened, say, at such and such a date
I'm
or a month,
to,
or
I'm
you don't have
going
to be
to talk
specific.
About, I'm not going to talk about
then
my conversations.
You're
going
to continue
leaders.
To have to answer this question then.
I don't think so, because the average American citizen is more worried about the border. They're more worried about what we see in a White House and a president that since January has gone out there and misled the American people over 150 times, and nobody pushes him.
You know, that whoever that was interviewing her, you know, that is the first time I've ever watched anything from Newsmax that sounded remotely sane. Like, he was actually doing a pretty good job there.
Doing a very good job. Impressive in a very polite, very responsible way. I thought that was good. That was very high on my list of the collection I'm going to be keeping of.
You know, you got a scrapbook, huh?
Yeah, he's pretty good. But the winner is still Stuart Varney, right?
Oh, yes.
That was fantastic because, you know, he's sort of pressing her on it. And then she finally, like, scolds him. She goes, no, Stuart, these questions are inappropriate, right? And she's telling him not to ask these questions. And he says, well, but these are the questions people want to have answered. It was very fair and reasonable way to come back at her. And she's like, Diddy, I don't think so, and stuff like this. And she kept fighting it with him. And he said, well, I really think that we need to discuss this. And she said, I think you're wrong. I'm not going to do it. And then he said, well, thank you very much, and ended the interview.
It is remarkable. All right, one more clip on Christy Noem, who is not having a good week.
Doing these interviews.
She stopped her whole book tour. The book tour is over.
I think the book may be over.
And the Amazon reviews are coming in, and not good. All right, this is from Fox. Their little comedian snide dude, Greg Gutfeld.
She's also accused of making up a story of meeting Kim Jong-un. According to sources, Kim Jong-un was upset they didn't meet since he'd already prepared one of his country's signature dishes.
Yes, he had to bring in a little racial stereotyping.
Well, and also another
a reference to the dog.
Yeah. You know, this is the thing that really blew my mind, though. As more details from the book have come out, have you read the section on the killing the dog?
No.
So she goes and she takes her dog. And it's sort of bizarre because the dog is like sitting in the front seat and said, she's writing that he was like as happy as can be, you know, and he'd had a great time out hunting with everybody. And she didn't like how he, you know, behaved with the other dogs and stuff. But she was talking about this like, very, you know, chipper, happy dog, right? And so she wheels into an area by where her house is being built or something. Something's being constructed. And she jumps out, takes the dog by the leash, goes over the hill with the long gun. And there are guys doing construction on the house. And she writes about this. They're watching her, right, do this. And she goes over the hill. And they hear a shot, right? And then apparently she comes back and gets a goat, like a family goat.
Oh, I know about the goat.
Takes the goat over the hill and shoots the goat. Right?
So the goat and the dog happened on the same day.
Apparently.
Oh.
And then like the contractor, from what I'm understanding here, Chris Hayes had a good report on it. You check it out more thoroughly. I hope I'm getting everything right here. But then the contractor calls and says, is everything okay with you? And apparently the contractor said, yeah, because a couple of my guys were concerned, you know, there was like a lot of gunfire and animals disappearing, right? And it's like, who in the world would put that in a book, right? I mean, if you're either you're being very, very frank about stuff, right? So it's like she's basically, I don't think, understanding that other people were looking at what she was doing and thinking it looked a little crazy. And then also you notice that apparently in the give and take and all this, she recently revealed that, I guess, in the same place, they killed 3 horses.
Oh, well, now. Isn't that a nice howdy-do?
No, but I mean, I highly recommend Chris Hayes' segment. I think it was on Friday night or one night recently, where he kind of went through all the sections of the book, you know, all the different parts of it, with the offing of animals.
Well,
and I tell you.
You know, Chris Hayes, who I don't always agree with, he's been kind of doing a theme for a very long time that this new right-wing world we live in, and I wouldn't even describe it as right-wing, just lunatics. Cruelty is the point, right? And I think maybe we reached the limit of what rank-and-file crazies that are now making up the Republican Party will tolerate. It's like, she actually jumped the shark by shooting the dog.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the goat, weirdly enough, I know the dog was really bad, but, you know, then when you add on to it, that you also decide, you're going to kill the family billy goat. As long as you're killing animals, might as well go all in. It gets to a point that, you know, I think I think there's 2 levels of response here. One is that I know a lot of Republicans who love their dogs. You know, a lot of very conservative, very right-wing folks who love their dogs. In fact, the dog may be the one, you know, steady source of positive response in their life. So there's that group there. And then there's also the you know, maybe more troubled group who maybe don't even love their dogs, but at least know enough to not say that they're out killing dogs and goats, right? And when you combine that, I do think you probably get to a majority within the Republican Party.
Yeah. Well, this woman has a lot of other problems. She's feuding with the attorney general in the state. She's I think she's fired five chiefs of staff. Things aren't going well for her.
Overall, it just sounds really, it sounds bad on a lot of levels. And I have to say, we're joking about it a little bit because it's so absurd. But when she went out to do this publicity tour, right? If you listen to that interview you played just a moment ago from Newsmax, it sounded bizarrely like she still thought somehow there was a way she could talk her way out of this. And that is a sign of deep delusion, right? You know, that's a really troubling image, right? Of somebody who, you know, it's so clear that this is done with. And it's the point at which to acknowledge, to say, look, I didn't talk to Kim. I didn't write the book, or I was bragging when I was talking to my ghostwriter and I said things I shouldn't, you know, whatever you say. But it's the point at which to become at least somewhat self-deprecating. And she was not prepared to do that. And I think, as the host there said, a couple weeks ago, she was very high on the list. Now, I don't think she's even near the list.
I don't know why Trump just can't bring Sarah Palin back. Let's go with the original.
Palin's got to feel pretty good right now. You know, Palin's got to feel like it's looking pretty good. But you know what the truth of the matter is? When you look at that list of potential candidates, what's the thing that stands out for you?
They're all crazy?
Well, sort of. Nobody who's kind of like, you think of it as a legitimate...
Well, I'm losing you a little bit there, John. Fuzzing out a little bit.
Sure. Legitimate mainstream player in the Republican Party is on that list.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. Stand by. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation at SlysOffice.com.
Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. We love guitars.
The attorneys at Gingrich, Thompson, and Wachs have had the honor of receiving numerous awards for their work both in and outside the courtroom. But just as important as receiving accolades for being skilled attorneys, it's equally important to give back to the community in which they live and work. If you want a personal attorney that can help you in so many different areas, they've got them. They're in Eau Claire, Madison, Milwaukee, and Waukesha. They're easy to reach. GTWLawyers.com. Welcome back to the podcast, sponsored by our friends at Madison Computer Works and Jeff's Guitar Clinic. Joining us again, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Well, President Biden came to what was at one time a very important swing county in Wisconsin, Racine County, to make a major investment in that area and hopefully help an area that has been gutted, and I do mean gutted, from jobs because of bad trade deals. Let me play this clip. Hang on a second. I got to make sure that I've got the right clip here.
In fact, 6 years ago, when my predecessor came to Racine with the promise of, quote, reclaiming our country's proud manufacturing legacy. Well, we had infrastructure day every week for 4 years, didn't build a damn thing. He and administration promised a $10 billion investment by Foxconn to build a new manufacturing complex, create 13,000 new jobs. In fact, he came here with your Senator Ron Johnson.
And there's a little more here. Hang on. Oh, great. Hang on a second, John.
Okay.
And then Mr. Biden said this.
Look what happened. They dug a hole with those golden shovels, and then they fell into it. Look, they didn't shovel other dirt. They did shovel some dirt. 100 homes were bulldozed. They wasted hundreds of millions of dollars your state and local tax dollars to promise a project that never happened. Foxconn turned out to be just that, a con. Go figure.
So, what do you make of this?
This is really smart stuff. Look, it's no secret that Joe Biden's got a tough reelect. And excuse me, it's not gonna be easy. This is, you know, we're in a mood as a country, and so as a result, I think anybody who was president would have a tough time of it. So Biden's got to kind of make the argument for himself, and he's got to make it place by place, region by region across the country. Wisconsin's a key battleground state, and this is more evidence that Biden really has a good kind of clear sense of what he needs to do to win Wisconsin. And so it, just as when he went to Green Bay not long ago, he's coming into a swing area in southeast Wisconsin, which has a deep knowledge of a particular economic development effort that was the Foxconn push that Trump and Scott Walker did. That was a disaster. Everybody in the region knows it was a disaster. They tore up the roads, they tore up the farmland, they, you know, restructured local government, did every, you know, it was a huge, huge initiative. And then it kind of came to nothing. It crashed and burned.
Oh, so, I drove by their headquarters in downtown Milwaukee the other day.
Yeah.
The lights were not on.
I thought you said like the sign would be hanging down on, this store.
Honest to God, it looks like one of those businesses that went out of business years ago and the sign is just sitting there.
So there you have it. That's basically right. And so then Biden comes in, reminds people of that trauma. And remember, that was actually kind of trauma for southeastern Wisconsin. They had all these promises, 13,000 jobs, you know, billions of dollars, and it all fell apart. And he doesn't just criticize Trump and Scott Walker. He arrives with something, right? This new commitment for a multi-billion dollar Microsoft AI future technology oriented site that's going to go there with thousands of jobs. I mean, it's kind of the perfect way to juxtapose Trump's promises and failure to deliver with Biden's actual focus on doing things. And the truth of the matter is, I think it's very good for the Wisconsin fight, you know, because Foxconn's something, that whole storyline is something Wisconsin actually understand. I think it was critical to actually defeating Scott Walker in 2018. But it's also, frankly, not just a Wisconsin thing. Don't you think that, you know, just the storyline there done right, that could even be a national ad? I mean,
I agree.
It's such a powerful distinction.
I agree. Now, The Atlantic wrote a piece about why Biden isn't getting helped for all the stuff he's done for the building trades and unions over the last 3 years. You wrote a piece talking about how he isn't quite the best labor president yet. Where do you see this going?
Well, I mean, when I wrote that piece, it was because they'll often say he's the best union president in history. And that's just not the case. I mean, Franklin Roosevelt gets the mark there because Roosevelt kind of opened the floodgates. The measure of a successful president as regards labor is not just to say you're for labor, but to actually deliver, right? To kind of move it to the next level. And I can tell you, quite frankly, because that was several months ago that I wrote that. Look at what's been happening right now. We've just got, you know, new data that suggests that union membership actually is now moving up in a significant way. We've got the significant contract victories for the Teamsters and the UAW. And one of those, UAW one, especially related to Biden showing up on the picket line. And then we've got the win at Volkswagen, big win for UAW. We've got a very possible, not certain win at Mercedes coming. So we're cracking the South. And so this gets to my point. For Biden, he needs to aspire to really be what they say, the best president for labor in history. That requires a second term. And it requires a second term in which, you know, tremendous movement is made toward a higher level of union membership. But on balance, so, you know, they're on track.
So can I make an observation here in that, sure, you know, every day, every year we're at Labor Fest. How many years have we been at Labor Fest at the South Central Federation of Labor? Now I'm going to be going to two every year with my addition of Milwaukee. The building trades are always sort of kept separate from the other unions. There's a real cultural divide. And I don't like seeing that, but it's kind of the reality. For a lot of young people, Joe Biden walking with GM workers in Michigan doesn't connect with them the same way maybe Joe Biden showing up at a picket at a Starbucks might. What do you think about that? Because a lot of young people can't relate to the guys building cars, but they can relate to a barista getting screwed over by Howard Schultz.
Well, I think there's some truth in that. And so, look, this is the bottom line. Biden showing up on that UAW picket line was, that was the first, right?
It connected with me, but let's face I'm a dinosaur.
But you're an easy touch in this, right? Any picket line, you're going to be happy with.
Just flashback to the Clinton years, of course.
Yeah, when they didn't come anywhere near it. I think that was a first step, but it was a really important one. Biden needs to do more of that. We're moving on two tracks here. What Biden did down in Mount Pleasant, talking about actual jobs and delivering on, the job future of the United States. That's one track. And then it's the second track is the quality of those jobs. Are those going to be union jobs with good compensation, good protection, good safety in the workplace, et cetera? He needs to do both of those things. He now has plenty of evidence of his commitment, right? There's plenty of evidence that he believes in it, that he does show up and he is delivering. The challenge is to just kind of keep it up. What Biden did on Wednesday this recent week in Racine County is something he ought to be doing every day. And I hate, it's hard. I know being president's a demanding job.
Well, yeah, he's got this little problem going on in the Middle East.
I understand all the demands, but you have to recognize here that when you are the sitting president of the United States, you have all the responsibilities of the presidency. You ask for that. And you have to live with it, right? You take all those duties. But by the same token, if you believe that what you're doing is good and important, then you also have a responsibility to get reelected. And you can't do that silly game of saying, I'll just let people look at my record. That's absurd. The way that you get reelected is to go out to the American people and say, here's what we've done, and here's what we will do if you give us another term. It is very demanding. It makes election years the most challenging year in any presidency because that's keeping of a second term.
I sure wish we lived in a world where both candidates would be in places like Oklahoma City and Bismarck and go to places like Salt Lake City or even in Illinois. My God, Illinois doesn't get visits from candidates anymore. This electoral system is so antiquated and so antithetical to the rest of what the founding fathers did. I don't get it.
Well, the electoral college is a disaster. We should have gotten rid of it a long time ago. And this is not some Democrat or Republican thing.
No.
Richard Nixon understood that the electoral college should be done away with.
Well, and he kind of did something admirable. It might have cost him the election. You remember he went to all the states back in 1960.
He went to Alaska.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying about this is that we missed an opportunity probably in 1969, 1970 to get rid of the Electoral College. It was after a very close presidential election in 68 where Nixon became president, which is 43% of the vote. And there was a realization that you needed a better system. We didn't do it. And why didn't we do it? It's the oldest story in the book. You can kind of go through American history again and again and again. Conservative Republicans and Southern segregationist Democrats didn't want to change the system, right? They liked how it was operating. They screwed us, as they have many, many times throughout our history.
The revenge. I'm kind of surprised they do because, Rutherford B. Hayes wasn't their guy. Although
he delivered for him.
Yeah, isn't that kind of where some of the progress after the Civil War ended, thanks to the Electoral College and the deal they cut?
Without a doubt. No. You can, if you wanted to track all the times the Electoral College has done us damage, it's kind of endless.
The Iraq War?
Yeah, I was going to say, that might be the first track. Or, frankly, Trump. Remember, Donald Trump lost the popular vote.
By a pretty good margin.
Although not as big as in the second election.
I want to get something else in here before I. First, I'm going to ask you what you thought of President Biden's speech about anti-Semitism.
It's important. It's important to speak about anti-Semitism, and presidents should do that on a regular basis. Speaking about anti-Semitism, speaking about Islamophobia, racism, sexism. These are things the president has a bully pulpit, and you should talk about it. I do think that I would like to see a little more nuance in the president's speech. I prefer. The speeches I've heard recently, the one that struck me the most powerfully was Jerry Nadler, the senior Jewish member of the U.S. House of Representatives, when he was speaking about anti-Semitism and making very strongly the point that it's not anti-Semitic to criticize Israel, right, to criticize its policies, to criticize its leadership. And I think that Biden has nodded in this direction and appropriately so. But I think that Nadler was especially powerful in this regard. I wrote about it recently, and I was struck by what a good job he did.
But
at the end of the day, speaking about the issue is valid and vital, right? I mean, it's worthy to talk about.
All right, so now Biden is getting flack from both sides. This report about Israel and abuses with what's going on in the Gaza Strip is very complicated. It's like the worst war zone spot ever to maneuver in, and it's in Hamas plays games. It's a very complicated situation. But now Republicans are very, very angry with the president, and they're trying to take full advantage that he isn't giving Israel carte blanche, at least with American weapons. Here is Ms. Lindsay, very angry the other day.
Civilians have been killed in Gaza.
No, that is not Lindsey Graham. Next.
Terrorist organization. Okay, so Israel's been hit in the last few weeks by Iran, Hezbollah, and Hamas, dedicated to their destruction. And you're telling me you're going to tell them how to fight the war and what they can and can't use when everybody around them wants to kill all the Jews? And you're telling me that if we withhold weapons in this fight, the existential fight for the life of the Jewish state, it won't send the wrong signal? Do you still think it was a good idea, General Austin, to get out of Afghanistan?
I support the president's
decision. Yeah, I think you do. I think it was a disastrous decision. If we stop weapons necessary to destroy the enemies of the state of Israel at a time of great peril, we will pay a price. This is obscene. It is absurd. Give Israel what they need to fight the war they can't afford to lose. This is Hiroshima and Nagasaki on steroids.
Whoa!
That closing line there was a powerful one, by any measure.
What is he talking about? Yeah,
I know. It's like, what? Where are you coming from?
First of all, what the president is holding back doesn't have anything to do with the funding package that just passed.
No. In fact, they just passed a huge funding package. And the fact of the matter is that nobody in their right mind, and I'll emphasize that line, nobody in their right mind thinks that the U.S. has not provided a lot of support to Israel, right? You know, I mean, the U.S. has been an absolutely critical supporter in military aid and other forms of aid for a very, very long time. And what Biden is doing is leveraging some small part of that aid and saying, you know, basically it's more sending a message than anything else, but he is saying, look, what's happening in Gaza is horrific. It's wrong. It's immoral. It borders on and may even stray into the area of genocide, according to experts on this from around the world. It's horrific, and it needs to stop. You don't expand it by going into Rafah. And I'm obviously saying a little more than what Biden said, but at the core, the message is one of deep concern about this and trying to get the Israelis not to do something that they should not do. And on this issue, I'm, as you would well know, I'm not with Lindsey Graham or with Benjamin Netanyahu, but I do stand with the many, many, many Israelis who say that Netanyahu is taking this thing in a terrible direction, and that this has got to stop.
So the one thing I've not heard from your tribe on this whole thing is, and obviously we have a prime minister who's a disaster, doesn't want a two-state solution, is literally probably doing everything he can to help Donald Trump. But, you know, I when I see the protesters down there, and I think some of their things they're thinking are pretty thoughts, but we're dealing with Iran here. This is not, Israel is in peril, and Iran is a really, really bad player. So we cannot cede to Iran in that region because they have very less than laudable goals. And I think of all the things students on campus and what they fought for. Do they really think if that region was run by an Iranian government, a satellite country run by the Iranian government, that there'd be transgender rights? Do they really think that there would be abortion rights? I get so frustrated with this because their approach to this, those kids down there, is so myopic.
I don't necessarily know if that's the case. I've talked a lot.
Oh, come on, John. They're wearing scarves and covering their faces, and it doesn't look mainstream, okay?
Maybe. Look, I'll tell you this. Here's the bottom line. The fact of the matter is that what Congressman Mark Pocan...
Oh, well, don't even... I'm a little mad at him right now, but go ahead.
But also what Bernie Sanders and what an awfully lot of the town...
Okay, but let's bring some mainstream people into this.
I'm bringing mainstream people in because they're saying that what Israel's doing is wrong.
Okay, but you never approach the Iranian side of this. You pretend they don't even exist.
I think people fully acknowledge.
No, I don't. That's where I think you are dead. That is where I think you are dead wrong. I don't think they acknowledge it at all.
Here's why you don't need to worry, brother. The United States' biggest ally in the Middle East is who?
Well, it's Israel.
Saudi Arabia.
Oh.
And where does Saudi Arabia stand on this issue?
Well, President Biden was trying to strike a peace deal between Israel and Saudi Arabia, which is what precipitated, evidently, although I suspect Russia's fingers are in this.
But look, what I'm telling you is, if you understand the dynamics of politics of the region, right, that the bottom line reality in this region is that there are always bad players. There are always going to be challenges. And you have to be conscious of that. You have to be aware of it. Are you right that there are some folks who may not be as conscious as they should be? Sure, that's fine. Is that really a concern? No, because the fact of the matter is that the political dynamics are such in the United States and globally that that Iran is not going to be given a blank check. It's just not going to happen.
I think I'm talking more about what Americans see as far as the debate in this whole thing. And I just think things have become very skewed in a direction of Palestine good, Israel bad. And I think that's an oversimplification of the Middle East.
Well, the politics often get simplified, but here's the thing to understand. When you look at this region of the world, what you will find is that, and somebody's reported a lot there, and it's actually been in Israel and Palestine quite a bit. I'll tell you, on the ground, there's a great deal of nuance. And there are people who actually, both in Israel and in Palestine, who want peace and who fully recognize that what's happened over recent months, Israeli assault on Gaza, has done Israel tremendous harm in the region.
Here's the problem with your side. The Rashida Tlaibs of the world, the Ryan Clancys of the world, never acknowledged what Hamas did to Israel. They don't acknowledge it. So we're starting from a premise where they don't really respect the human lives of Jews living in Israel.
See, this is the thing. This is what AIPAC keeps doing to POCAN, right? AIPAC keeps tweeting at POCAN saying, you never acknowledged October 7th, right? And then POCAN, of course, sends back his extended detailed statement.
I'm not saying that he didn't, but there are plenty of others that didn't.
But what I'm telling you is, this is the reality is that after Hamas attacked Israeli kibbutzim and the music festival in a brutal, horrific attack.
That could have been you and me in my our 20s at a concert.
I don't think you would have been at that concert. But but I will tell you.
Wait a minute now. I've been to as many concerts as you have.
You are not that much of a techno guy.
but I'm not talking about the genre of music.
So the bottom line, though, what I want to say clearly is the attack was horrific. It was overwhelmingly condemned.
But not by the leaders of the pro-Palestinian movement in the United States.
I don't think that's true.
I think it's true. Ryan Clancy refused to vote for the condemnation of that day.
I have to acknowledge I haven't followed everything that Ryan Clancy has done.
Oh, I'm going to be in his district.
But well, there you will report broadly on it. What I will tell you is that people who are very passionately supportive of Palestinian rights and of a Palestinian state responded to what happened in October with horror at what Hamas had done.
It was broadly stated,
and it is still often broadly stated. You know, this is the interesting thing. You know that I think that now people lose sight of the fact that a lot of the advocacy for an ending to Israel's current assault on Gaza says that what it seeks is peace in the Middle East for both Palestinians and Israelis.
All right, we're
not on a track that's taken us.
We've got to wrap it up there. We've gone way over. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Thanks for coming to Sly's office.
It's a pleasure to be with you, brother.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.